Welcome, Register Readers!
All right, we're using that one. It's episode 8, I believe. We've got Dave Rosenberg and Matt Acey on the line. Thanks for the
what is up?
Fancier intro, Matt.
Is anybody even with us at this point? I mean, I feel like I've got an uncontrollable rage problem at this time of year. The other day I was in such a rage about to go, you know, it was like 7:30 in the morning and I, you know, work, stress, whatever, and I literally had to stop myself from going to the office and then go running before I came in and tore somebody's arms off or something like that.
Wait, Dave, you went running? Do you run?
Oh, I started again after the back injury has gotten a little bit better, yeah.
Is this all to do with the resume spam, or do you have some other anger issues?
No, it was a different anger issue. I've got lots of anger issues, actually. Matt, what are you saying? You don't think I can perhaps get some exercise?
I know that you pump iron. That's the sort of exercise I expect from you. The man is girly running around.
The badman. That's embarrassing. The running is good. It forces you to think things through and realize how stupid you are, which I feel like the majority of the population needs to go take a run themselves, especially in the open source world.
I only run if I can watch Arsenal games on my treadmill while I run.
So you, Matt and I ran into each other in merry old England
nice segue.
Last week.
Run into each other. Bravo.
Well, I was going to say, you saw an Arsenal game, didn't you?
I did. They won, of course.
Did you?
They are ranked the number one team on the planet right now.
I thought Man United was still number one.
By me and by a few others.
Does it ever make you feel weird that you're that obsessed with a game that you're not actually playing?
Well, I'm just waiting for the day that they let me play. I mean, it's going to come.
It's inevitable.
They're going to realize that we got to get somebody to come in, win the game for us. Matt Acey's been devoted to us for so long. Let's put him in.
They're going to give you that penalty kick at 11th hour. It's going to be great. I look forward to it.
I'll bend it like Beckham. Posh will clasp her hands around me and be grateful for the goal.
You have to be the top open source blogger following Arsenal.
So I dare say the only, right?
I was trying to see if, you know, maybe if we talk about it on the show, we could get a free meal. Matt and I went to Tamarind, which is the, it has to be the only Michelin star Indian restaurant.
Only Michelin's has one Michelin star. It is fantastic.
Where is that?
It's in London, in the Mayfair district. It's the place where open source stars hang out and anti-open source. Well, I shouldn't say anti. Bill Hilf has eaten with the Alfresco team there. I've eaten with Nick McGrath, who runs Windows strategy for Microsoft in the UK. I've eaten with him there. Mark Shuttleworth, Ashley Vance, who's written that book about Silicon Valley, which I can't remember, although I do on my shelf. This is your chance to plug it, Ashley.
I believe it's called Geek, isn't it? I saw it on my bookshelf the other day.
Geek Silicon Valley.
A perfect gathering dust present on my bookshelf.
Oh, you bastard. So, yeah, Matt made us go through like the typical, we had big American flags on our back as we came in to the restaurant at 6 o'clock and had to get out by 7. But thankfully, Matt left us and I was able to drink on the Alfresco tab for some time after that.
Oh, you had Team Alfresco with you, the whole crew.
Well, we had two of us were there.
Oh, okay. You can't get three of you guys together. Next thing you know, it's like a SharePoint bashing party, and then no one's happy. Are we losing Matt? We lost Matt.
I'm here.
You're cutting out on me.
Obviously, no, something's happening in a soccer game.
No, my wife came in and asked which number was my phone number. We clearly have a very close relationship.
So away from Tamarind, which is excellent, and if we can get some kind of coupon there, that would be fantastic. should we talk about Yahoo? Perhaps Matt, you did some blog on Yahoo and Apache and Hadoop.
Oh, you know, yeah, I mean, we can spend a brief amount of time on that because that's the same old complaint that I think Dave and I have always had. So it's great Yahoo goes out there. They became a platinum sponsor of the Apache Software Foundation and everybody claps and cheers and it's great. I mean, it's a significant, I don't actually know how much money it means, but I would guess over $1 million to the Apache Software Foundation to help it do what it does. The problem, though, continues to be that, I mean, who was it that blogged on this past week? It was it Nick Carr or was it Tim O'Reilly? I can't remember. But the net is that what Apache really could use from Yahoo is a heck of a lot more code. And Apache or Yahoo does contribute code. They employ the Hadoop lead contributor. They undoubtedly contribute back to the various projects. I think Lucene and some others, but it still feels to me like a Band-Aid. It's not full open source. It's Yahoo deciding when and where it wants to contribute, when it's strategically good for it, but not when it's necessarily inconvenient. And I'm sorry, that's not really what open source is about. You contribute. You contribute on the same terms as everybody else, or you go out and write your proprietary software. So I thought it was a good move by Yahoo, but it continues to be a little too little.
I didn't realize this. Did you know the MapReduce software that they use in Hadoop, that was donated by Google. I always thought it was like a copy of MapReduce that had been tweaked. Business Week did this rather celebratory feature story this week on Google and how...
What? No! Yes, I find that impossible to believe.
How a single Google cluster that they're using running Hadoop to teach students about parallel programming. Apparently, I just did a story on this. This cluster is responsible for the future of science in our country and also, pretty much the future of computing. It's a powerful 1,600 nodes.
I can't believe that Business League would write a nice story about Google. Did they do a Facebook one too? Did anybody else? Is there anyone else who needs some gratuitous slobbering?
I don't think there's any room.
Besides Facebook?
The Google one has like four parts and, eight sidebars.
Here's the front cover, Google's next big dream.
It's true. It is really. It's gonna change my life. I'm sure of it. You know, is it me? I mean, is my backlash, my immediate just? Is this just my punk rock nature coming through of just being disgusted by this sort of blatant slobbering?
No, it's.
Am I wrong for this, or have we reached a level of absurdity here? Where like the only way you can get, much like I like to blog about how what big of retards the guys at Facebook are to drive traffic. I mean, is this what it is? Is this all it comes down to? Google and Facebook? Nothing else matters?
It's pretty much the standard form for a Business Week cover story. They're pretty ass-kissy in general for whoever they
are. But, I mean, everybody is jumping on the hog of these crappy companies.
Such as
good
the
companies or not,
the beast.
But I just don't feel good about them. Maybe that's what it is.
Matt,
could
don't
be.
You...
Well, I was just going to say, and there are lots of reasons actually to be kind of frightened by Google's growing power. I mean, there's the privacy issues and whatnot, and Tim O'Reilly's. I don't know if Tim just really wants his data as the intel inside to be the meme of the day or what. But I mean, he was almost congratulating Google for finding all sorts of way to put personal data into its big cloud machine and mine it and spit it out. He didn't seem to have any real concern for people's privacy or anything like that. Maybe he's a Scott McNeely, we have no privacy anyway sort of person. But I liked him a lot, and his blog this week kind of disturbed me. And that maybe it's because it came on the heels of me reading Nick Carr's The Big Switch, which was a really frightening book. I mean, it wasn't intended to be. The first half is talking about how we're all moving toward utility computing and how great that'll be and how efficient. But the second half is kind of this dystopian nightmare of what that means when you have a few big companies. And who was it? I think it was the guy from Yahoo saying there are effectively five big computers on the planet, and that's what Google, IBM, Microsoft,
Amazon,
Yahoo, and Amazon. And Amazon is the only one that seems at all benevolent to me, in that they are actually sharing that compute power so that startups can tap into it and grow on its back. But the rest of them, it's kind of frightening. I mean, you plug in and you never get out.
Actually, there's another plug. Nick Carr, I just interviewed him this week. He'll be on Semi-Coherent Computing, the first week of January, talking about these very topics. But it's pretty it's some freaky stuff, man. I'm glad to know that somebody likes Tim O'Reilly, though.
I like Tim O'Reilly a lot. I thought I just didn't like what he was saying, because it seemed, again, to be congratulating Google on finding out an even more pernicious way of locking in users by controlling all of their data and by finding sneaky ways to get them to give you even more data. I mean, that 411 service, using that to like get people's voice, to give voice recognition so they could do video search, it just gets kind of creepy.
I think it's really creepy. I mean, to the extent that it's awesome and like good for them for figuring these things out and how to manipulate all of us, but it's scary as hell. I mean, sooner or later, this stuff, it's got to, there can't forever be this, something's going to go wrong, I guess is what I'd say. Sooner or later, it's inevitable for something to go wrong.
Or
whatever else.
You'd hope that it goes wrong before. I mean, I had never realized what a freak Larry Page and Sergey Brin, what freaks they were, when I was reading in Carr's book about them saying, oh yes, one day we'll plug Google into your brain and whatnot. And these guys are dead serious. I'm like, these guys are absolute freaks. I mean, they like treat, from the quotes that I read, maybe they were taken out of context, let's hope so, but the quotes I read make these guys sound like they view people as these just ancillary appendages to computer. The computer is the AI is the big deal, and humans are just kind of necessary appendages to help feed data into them. And if to the extent that that's Google's grand vision, you know, let me out, because it was frightening.
Well, but I don't understand why people think it wouldn't be. I mean, it was predicated on having this whole thing, and it's just been glamorized because they do one thing sort of cool, and you know, it's a hip company and whatever else. But it's far scarier than even that Facebook stuff with that was revealing information. The Google stuff is way over the top. On the other hand, maybe it's just time to just submit and give up. What's the difference? They'll find out about us anyway.
Yeah, I don't think those quotes are taken out of context, Matt. I mean, we've written
a few
stories on this. Those guys are wackadoodle. Big time. Well, we've probably got a quota of Google bashing. And did you guys want to talk about...
If I could finish out on the Google bashing, by the way, I would like to address that I got my first phone call from someone who hated a blog post that I wrote. Because I said, because Google came out with a
call you all the time.
Well, you do, yeah, but that doesn't count.
Dave, explain this, because I was going to put a link into it in the show notes. But okay, explain what happened.
Here's what it was. I wrote this post, at 11th hour of the day, I had enough. And Google came out with a sync for your BlackBerry, where you can sync your calendar now with the Google apps, which is important for me. I think that's the missing link of like Zimbra and everything else, is that you can't sync your stuff. And so I said something along the lines of how this should really, Exchange should already be dead and this was going to kill it. And, I figured, sure, it'll drive a little traffic. It'll get on the news.com, which it did. And then I had a rough morning, like Thursday morning, I think it was. And so I was up real early and had to deal with all these things. And about 8 o'clock, I checked my voicemail and some guy is ranting like a maniac about what an idiot I am and how Exchange is never going to die and like what about the Trio and the GoodLink device. And a normal person would have just deleted it and said what a crackpot. Of course, I immediately call him back. I guess he didn't realize that my phone would have caller ID. I don't know. So I call the guy back and he won't tell me who he is. And I was using some fair amount of foul language and I finally said, look, I'm not going to justify my answers to you or my blogging or whatever else. You're not going to even tell me who you are. Turned out the guy's like a VP of operations. He had been at Six Apart, so he was like a blogging guy. He didn't understand why I would post this, and he was like upset that I would say that Exchange was going to die. And I mean, really, it was like a 6-minute, like maniacal rant.
Did you guys make peace in the end? Or?
We did.
Or Steve Ballmer.
Steve Ballmer, yeah. Well, the thing that just didn't make sense to me is, I guess people often, like when they ask me and Matt why we blog, besides the fact that Matt just can't not shut up, he has to type something at all times. A big reason to do it is it's a marketing effort, both for ourselves and for our companies. When you get a CNET, CNET is a very reputable source, Google and things like that. But the results rank really high, and so every post of mine has my name and my company name in it. So it's a good marketing tool. I tried to finally explain to this guy, but it was so bizarre. I didn't even know how to react, and it made me feel better about the crappy morning I had had.
So you explained to him that you're a marketing tool, and he couldn't understand that.
I explained I'm a tool, is what I said, sir. said, I'm a tool of the man. I'm a tool of this corporation. I got nothing going for me. CNET takes no responsibility for me if I slander or libel you.
No, so, in fact, quite the opposite.
Yeah. In fact, they do everything they can to distance themselves from me and Matt.
Right. I mean,
it was very strange.
Well, I don't want to spend much time on that, but I will say that it is kind of interesting on the – Ashley, I mean, you guys at the Register, Dave called you out on doing some great journalism recently, and I know the CNET and these other publications do as well, but – and I don't want to say – I don't want to put forward the argument that bloggers have taken over the news gathering function, because far too many people confuse me with an impartial journalist, or at least in – journalist who attempts to be impartial. I don't even try. I have no desire whatsoever to be unbiased. I mean, I am a biased person, but I mean, the volume of my volume of posts, Dave's volume of posts, we put out a heck of a lot of stuff. What is the future of journalism? I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't have anything to talk about if I couldn't criticize other people, that real journalists who had written things. So I think it's always going to be a parasitic function, but I mean, what do you think? Is your job in danger? Can I have it?
I thought you already did. You know, it's a big question. It's obviously, I don't think anyone's shedding too many tears to see lots of journalists hitting the unemployment line. It's kind of like if you were putting lawyers out of work, I suppose. But you know, I've always thought, as being a journalist, you get kind of paid to sit around and watch stuff that, you know, while other people have their day jobs, they have to kind of focus on. So I think there'll always be a need for some kind of person out there watching and keeping a check on things, and then having a consolidated space to go find that. Once you know how it is. You have certain papers that you like to read or identify with. And
wait, let's extrapolate this for a minute if we can, right? So let's assume that journalism is okay and there has to just be a new level of management, or maybe that's really what it is, right? Managers and executives need to understand the way that the new functionality works, right, with blogs and stuff like that. I think we're headed for a similar thing, and Matt and I talked about this already, in the open source world with this where, just like how journalism was always driven by other journalists who didn't maybe get it, you know, I'm starting to see a lot of these same symptoms occurring in open source companies that are driven by engineers who are not getting the business aspects of it. And I think it's just the business maturing as time goes on here.
I don't understand what you guys are saying, that you think because there's bloggers that you guys are killing the journalism field.
I don't think so. No,
That's not what I was saying. I do think that the volume, I mean, if I look at what I read on a daily basis, I read very little news. I read mostly commentary on news. So somebody has to put it out. But I actually think the commentary is much more interesting. Frankly, that's why I like UK or British journalism. Whenever I'm over there, I don't read every article, but I go through cover to cover 5 or 6 newspapers a day, because they mix commentary into the articles. So I'm not just getting this quote-unquote unbiased, unvarnished view of the news. Actually, in some ways, it reminds me of open source, because there was a thought at one time that that community open source development could do anything, right? And, you know, we don't need the man, we don't need corporations. The reality has turned out to be very different from that. You do need corporations either funneling money into so-called community-based open-source projects like Linux and Apache and whatnot. Witness Yahoo's contribution. Apache would have a difficult time doing all the things that it does without corporate paid developers and donations like that. But also, there wouldn't be a MuleSource. I mean, there was Mule, the project, well before MuleSource came along to monetize it. But I would argue that 2 years from now, the quality of the Mule project will be 10x what it was. And, you know, had it just been left alone to Ross to develop in his basement in Malta. And it's certainly the case with MySQL, JBoss, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and all these other things. They've seriously benefited from having corporations involved. So maybe you never do get this this citizen journalism, the bloggers. I certainly don't think you do. I wouldn't want to read my stuff all the time if I didn't have any real journalist to comment on. And I think in the same way, you don't really, open source doesn't have much of a future if it's just community-based development.
So do you think that the UK pubs are just further along the evolution, or do you think that was just always stylistically the way it went?
I think it's more stylistic. I mean, I think the Register is very much a UK type of publication.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, of course.
The snarkiness and whatnot.
You get to use the word slag and slapper.
No, that's the way. I mean, that's definitely a UK journalism kind of thing. I mean, I think, you know, you have to have room for stuff like Reuters and AP that are objective, doing the news basics, and then you have things that you might trust, like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. I think in the U.S., you know, you have all these publications under the guise of objectivity, and then you end up with shit like that Business Week cover story where, you know, you're being told that this is like an objective thing written by a top-end publication,
yeah,
but in reality, it's like such an optimistic fluff piece that it's no closer to objectivity than someone who is just, you know, cynically laying into something with nothing to back it up. And I think in the U.S., people get there's this optimism around business, and if you dare to kind of be cynical about that, you're seen as being subjective. When, you know, if Microsoft screws up and you call them out, how is that? It seems to me that it's subjective if you don't kind of say, yes, you know, this is what went wrong. Instead,
it's broken.
Right.
So wait. So address my point then, Matt. Do you think? So I've been sort of thinking about this now for a couple of months. That I think that we, as the open source world, if you will, are in some level of danger of eradicating ourselves by not taking the business side of this seriously. And I'm starting to become concerned, even for myself, because I'm an idiot too. But at least I'm aware that I'm an idiot. As I look at all the companies who got funded and all these other kinds of things, and you start to see, you know, when the money is going to round out and all this other kind of stuff, I actually think that a majority of the companies are going to flame out or fail because they never took the business side of this seriously. They played at being a business versus actually being a business. And I can think of a lot of examples that I won't name, but I can think of, you know, 10 off the top of my head.
You mean open source companies that are crappy because they never
crossed the chasm, because they're still engineers and they never became real businesses and they never thought it through, and they always felt like the community and all this other kind of crap was just gonna hoist them above everything else, and it turns out it's actual real work to have a company.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of truth to that, and I would actually say that some of those, and I think we're probably thinking of the same companies, some of those are probably crappy projects too. So they're not just not just crappy companies, they're crappy projects around that. But no, absolutely. I mean, I think you can err on the side. I don't want to put this too strongly, but I think you can err on the side of having good management, business sense, and a good product, but not necessarily a good community. And you can rectify that. I think it's very hard to fix a crappy product, no matter what you throw at it, no matter how good the business is around it. But I think a crappy community is something that can be fixed.
See, I'm not sure if I agree, because to some extent I do, but if you look at some of the products that maybe were not great in some of their earlier days and still managed to have community and whatever else, versus some of the guys who had community but could never monetize well. And if we start to look at, say, you know, if we look at JBoss now, which you had blogged something about this recently, good product, good community, somehow, I don't know, I'm hesitant. I wouldn't say that it's dying on the vine. I wouldn't even say that it's even gone south, but it's just not as relevant anymore. And what do you think happened there?
See, I mean, so that is a big topic lately, and I don't know if I agree. I don't actually know that I know enough to be able to agree or disagree. It's certainly the case that Red Hat has done a less than optimal job in integrating the people involved in JBoss. I mean, the salespeople went first, and you know what? Salespeople are always the first to go in any acquisition, so that's not a big surprise. But I think that Red Hat did allowed that to boil over into the development teams. And so you have people like Roy Russo taking off with Tom Elrod. Bearden.
Bob Bearden is gone, and Bob Bickle is gone, and all these guys who did that stuff.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting. So I don't want to dig into...
Don't get yourself in trouble here.
Well, I was going to say, Novell, even when it was having struggles... like it's had for some time. it's always kept its it has always kept the executives of the companies that it has acquired. I mean, interestingly, Nat Friedman and on the development side, Nat Friedman and Miguel de Acasa are still there after what? Must have been 4 or 5 years.
At least 4 years, yeah.
That's I don't know. That's pretty interesting, given that.
Well, but I mean, so some of it, and we talked about this even with Flurry, was the fact that going from a one product company to be a many product company is a challenge. And there's a lot of talk even today out in the blog world about Red Hat being acquired and all these other things. And I mean, you're not going to acquire Red Hat to get the operating system business, right? And then, or I guess you are, because the JBoss is sort of may or may not be successful. I mean, I'm still a fan of the product, and I think that it's far better than the proprietary ones. But What's the value at this point for Red Hat? Like, is JBoss just a write-off and maybe it'll make money? I mean, if you look at the strategy around it, it's just still not clear. It's 2 years later.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little too – I think if they report bad numbers around JBoss this quarter, then I think there's serious cause for alarm. But they may surprise everybody. Well, I mean, I actually think talking with our favorite analyst, he actually thinks Jason. I'm not sure if we're allowed to say what other analysts think until they put them down in writing. You know, some analysts are completely bagging on Red Hat, but yet they're almost all saying, or the ones that I've seen are saying, that they're going to have a really strong quarter. And yet, against the backdrop of saying they're going to have a strong quarter, they're saying, but their JBoss business is going south. And I don't know. I mean, it could well be that the Linux business is just so freaking strong that it's going to carry JBoss for a while. I don't know.
Well, it probably is. I mean, I think, you know, from sort of looking at the JBoss, what they have gone in a really aggressive direction with the new products, with a lot of new stuff. And, you know, they sort of took on an Oracle, if you will, right? They tried to become an enormous stack of stuff more or less overnight. And they didn't even have enough people to get there in the first place when they were JBoss. And with Red Hat, it seems like it's a bigger challenge. And so it does kind of make me wonder, at what point do they say, okay, we need to think this through a bit more, or are they just going to stick to their guns? And there's a couple of companies. There's another company, one of my mortal enemies, an Irish company, I'll give you that, as a Irish software company, who someone described to me recently as having described to me as having an existential crisis where they're trying to fit everything into their world, including open source. And it just doesn't seem clear to me that these are the right answers. But this is where I'm wondering, you know, like, are we all going to end up in the same boat? Because as I said, I'm just as dumb as everybody else. Am I going to realize that I'm screwed before the time comes when I really am screwed?
Let's hope so.
Ha ha. Crystal ball.
So speaking of Red Hat, they were on this list. You guys may, you know, I think you're giving them too hard of a time because according to TechIQ, they're set to dominate 2008. They're one of 10 companies, open source companies.
But, you know, they should, man. They should dominate even more than they do. I mean, I think this is the point that Matt and I both stand behind, is that there's no reason for them not to dominate even more. And I'd like to see them do so because it only helps us. I mean, obviously, I don't need the JBoss product competing with me. But on the other hand, maybe I don't care because the more business that Red Hat does and the more that open source is acceptable, the better the world is for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, and that is the source of, you know, I've been called the Red Hat cheerleader and whatnot. And I suppose to a certain extent I am. Part of it is because I think Red Hat is really good for open source generally. And I want Red Hat to succeed. Make no bones about
Absolutely.
It. I want Red Hat to succeed.
Let me. I want to quiz you guys because I was looking at this list and I did not know some of these companies. Number 9 is Untangle. Have you guys ever heard of Untangle?
Yeah, they did a Hail Mary. Well, they're a Page One client, so I won't talk too badly about them. But they had some mediocre technology that they did a Hail Mary open source on.
And so I'm told here on this page is a startup that develops an open source gateway that blocks spam, spyware, viruses, and adware. So when they did this open source Hail Mary, has it made a difference, or we're still waiting to see?
They got some press. There you go.
Yeah, no, that's the only company on that list that I don't. I mean, I interviewed their CEO, I don't know, a while ago, a year or so ago. It seems, you know, what they're doing is interesting, but they're the only one on that list that I don't routinely hear about.
So number 8.
Yeah, I don't see them dominating. Let's be honest here.
No, Number 8's WordPress. We all know about that. Number 7 is Open Bravo, Enterprise Resource Planning. I guess
Matt loves them.
I've heard the name, but I'm not that.
I do like Open. I mean, I'm an advisor at Open Bravo, so truth in advertising. I think the VAR guy, generally speaking, got things right. I mean, the big Open Bravo has two things going against it. One, it's based in Spain, which is actually not necessarily a bad thing. So one thing that we found at Alfresco is that we've got half of our business now coming out of Europe, and I think in most companies, you're lucky to get, I don't know, 30%, maybe 40% out of Europe. But open source is different in large degree because governments in Europe are buying so heavily into open source. That's where a significant amount of Alfresco's business in Europe is in these governments that have either legislated for open source or are heavily in favor of open source. And so the fact that Open Bravo is there in Europe where a lot of this action is happening, in Spain, one of the top three open source markets, I think it's not a bad thing. The other thing that it has going against it, though, is that ERP, open source ERP, hasn't really caught on yet. And, you know, it's an uphill battle going against SAP and Oracle in that market because you don't choose
ERP on a whim.
Yeah, you don't choose ERP on a whim. You don't choose it because it's cheap. You choose it because... Yeah. You know, because you trust the vendor. I think they're okay, though, because this is one market where I think an SMB play actually does make sense. If they can provide something that SMBs can actually use, if they can package ERP such that it's actually useful for SMBs, then I think it's great. And I'll tell you what, they're doing really well. They're up, I think their sales year over year are up 300%, so they're not doing poorly.
Number 6, we got JasperSoft, thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I feel good about those guys, but I think it's a tough market. They made a crucial mistake back in the day when they had the opportunity to go GPL.
So what, it's business intelligence?
Yeah.
And they went with the attribution license?
LGPL. And so that, I think, presented a challenge for them because they have literally hundreds of thousands of people who embed their product and are never going to pay them. Yep. And selling support for that versus a JBoss is a very different story.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. VAR guy kind of gets that wrong. He talks about all these, the ability to, that it's going to be integrated with this and that. And what Dave says is absolutely right. It will get integrated with this and that, and it's missing out on all the money that could be attached to it, to all those integrations, which would come if it were GPL.
Yep.
Number 5 is Canonical. We all know who they are. Number 4 is... Google
Android. Yeah, but
Android.
You know what? Stop for a second on Canonical. Think about this. I just read on James Governor's blog, and I'm gonna post something on it shortly after I get back from soccer. By the way, Arsenal is up 3-2, and there's only 1 minute left, so we're all happy.
Thank God.
Think about this. IBM needs a distribution. Who do you think that they would pick?
No. IBM needs a distribution for what?
Linux distribution.
No, we've talked about this before, man. They can't do that.
No, they can. And I suspect at some point Ubuntu's going to actually look pretty compelling because it's the only one that's the only big distribution that's not affiliated with anybody. A hunch on my part. But
what does that give IBM? I don't understand. I'll never understand this.
Yeah. Oh, it makes perfect sense because IBM then has the neutral Linux that they certify, and they tell everybody you don't have to be beholden to Red Hat or SUSE or anybody. It's the only true free Linux is Ubuntu.
What does that do for them besides get them just a ton of grief from open source?
Now they can dedicate their resources towards that. What grief is it going to give?
No, Ashley, I think there's something there. What I would see if I had to look out into the crystal ball and say, what's the biggest threat to Red Hat? You know, beyond the JBoss business not taking off, you've got Oracle that's already said we're doing our unbreakable Linux and hasn't affected their revenues yet at all. Red Hat's revenues, I mean. But and then you've got people circling the wagons. And what happens if IBM takes off and does their own distribution through Ubuntu or through something else? I think suddenly things start to look kind of frightening for Red Hat. I don't think it'll happen in the short term, but it's something that I'm betting that the people in Raleigh are thinking about on a regular basis.
I just don't see how that plays out. I mean, then you have what? I mean, HP and Dell are never going to sell IBM's Linux.
It doesn't matter. They can have Red Hat. They can have SUSE. I mean, I don't know. I think it's interesting, too. I'm with Matt on this one. I like a conspiracy theory anyway.
Then you just get back to the Unix wars. I don't think they want to do that.
Well, why not? Let's keep going. What's
number four, Google Android, which is
it hasn't been anything.
Quite the big bet for something that barely exists.
Got lots of press because it's Google and it's nothing.
I'd like to see it be impressive at some point, but it's not there yet.
We got Sugar CRM. That's pretty well known story.
Yeah. Anybody? I don't know. I don't necessarily have any comments at all. I mean, Sugar 5GA just came out. I guess we'll see.
I've never heard of Digium. Perhaps I'm exposing myself.
Yeah, Digium is huge. That's.
Well, is Digium huge or is Asterisk huge?
Asterisk is huge, but Digium has started doing these enterprise distributions of Asterisk. Before, it was just a hardware company that sold these adapters. It's changed its model, and I think it's getting more and more interesting by the day. So
we use it.
We're just starting to use it too. I think Asterisk or Digium has a huge opportunity. It's one of the least reported and most interesting open source companies.
I was going to say, so telephony.
Yeah, it's VoIP, but it's actually very cool. You can do all this crazy stuff with like branch offices and people all around. There are a bunch of plugins that people have written. It is a really the project is enormous and hugely popular. I mean, I tell you, it's as good or better than every other thing I've tried, like 3Com, Nortel, whatever, Cisco. Way better than the Cisco phones we had back at my last office.
Who does that PR? Or maybe I'm just not paying attention.
They're in Alabama. Oh. And I think they probably have, I don't know, they certainly don't have Page One because we would all know about them then, wouldn't we?
Nicely done. Then number one is MySQL, which we all know about. Why weren't Alfresco and MuleSource on this?
Because this guy's a son of a bitch. I don't know who this is, actually. I don't know the bar guy.
You know what? I think he got it mostly right. I think based on revenue, for example, of which I think is the main reason that he put Sugar on there, and Sugar's company, then, you know, had he known our revenue, we would have been up there too. So I think generally speaking, he got the list right. I mean,
it's an acceptable list. I mean, he probably needed 15.
Yeah, and if I were to do it, I would add MuleSource to the list, not just because Dave's on the call. I'd put Alfresco on the list because, and not just because I'm on the call, because we are seriously doing extremely well. I'd probably put, who else would you put on there, Dave? I mean,
I'm trying to think through it now.
I would actually, in terms of companies to watch, they still have a lot to prove, but I would put LoopFuse on that list because I think it's a huge opportunity. I think there's a lot that they have to prove, but I think it's a big opportunity.
What's the other? There's a couple others. I'm just spacing out now because I got nothing. I mean, I actually think that I agree with Matt. This is pretty good. I had lunch with Martin Mikos a couple weeks ago, and I got to tell you, man, I'm impressed. Those guys have really, for what seemed like they were starting to go a little bit sideways with some stuff, man, they have really got their stuff together. I was really impressed.
I keep waiting for friends and family shares, but
ain't gonna happen, is it?
Not happening.
So maybe we'll close out with Dave, your new PC. I mean, talk about
the Asus, the Triple E. I'm into it, man.
A machine that may dominate 2008. I mean, this thing gets pretty rave reviews.
Well, so tell me on that. I had lunch, or tea, I should say, with some people while I was in the UK, and they were bagging on it, calling it the Windows.
No, you know what, man?
Machine saying that somehow Microsoft. Oh, I think it's because they're using, aren't they? They must be using somebody's technology.
It's Xandros.
Yeah,
it's
Xandros. Xandros hoard themselves out to Microsoft. Okay, so that was why they were bagging on it.
Yeah,
All right. You
can actually, there's a new Ubuntu install for it, which is just, you know, if you want Ubuntu versus Xandros, it's fine. But I'll tell you, the interface is really good. You know, they did a good job with the whole thing, the form factor and everything else. I mean, it took me maybe 5 minutes and I could touch type on it, which I thought was pretty amazing. Screen is a little bit small, but I'll tell you, you know, without really talking smack about Apple, my Leopard install is getting worse by the day. I mean, things are getting weirder and weirder. I can't figure it out. I'm starting to think that there's I tried all the memory stuff. I tried all the hardware. The thing is getting almost unusable at this point.
What, files are going missing? Or?
Yeah, I mean, like, even things like, you know, I'm plugging in, like, a USB device, and all of a sudden my Finder disappears, and you can't restart the Finder, stuff like that. Every application crashing. So I've done every single possible thing. I've blogged about this a few times. People actually sent me some pretty useful stuff. But, you know, the thing is for me with this Triple E PC, it's got some – it still has the occasional quirk. Like, the wireless works, but you also have to associate it properly with the network. In terms of the UI and just, like, the usability of it, it's actually perfect to give, like, your parents or whatever else, because it's got webmail, all the stuff. It's one icon. It's big. It's easy to use. It all just works. And if you want to geek out, it has a terminal. You know, it's like whatever, Control-Shift-T, and you have a Unix terminal.
How much – is it 4 gigabyte?
4 gigabyte. It was $400, and it's fantastic. I mean, battery life gets. I've gotten. I guess it's about 3 hours or so. It doesn't get that hot. It is a little small. I mean, the screen is a little small. Like, you start to wonder whether or not you need new glasses, kind of thing, after a while. But it's fantastic. They did a great job with it, no matter what anybody says. And I'm not a big fan of the Android Microsoft thing. Asus. ASUS. It's a Taiwanese company, I believe. Apparently, there's an 8 gig one coming out as well, and it's like $500.
Yeah, I think
I'd still rather see an Apple version. Don't get me wrong, because I'd rather see the OS, and you know, an Apple version will be still more pleasant. But this thing is great, man. And if you look at it in comparison to, like, I saw somebody saying you can buy a Dell 15.4, whatever, for like $500. Yeah, but it's like 8 pounds, and it runs Windows, and it's going to suck, and it's going to have like crapware on it. What's the point? $400, you're out the door. It has, you know, my Skype, everything worked immediately. Really impressive.
I just got this new Vio. It's quite fancy. It's one of the little teeny weeny ones.
With
40 gigabytes of solid state disk.
Which what's the model number?
I don't know. I'll have to tell you. It got sent to me. I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, I'm into it. I'm very pleased with it, and I rarely have success with such things. I'm always a first generation buyer and then miserable because of it.
I will put a link into my Vio, and I will send it to you.
Excellent. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we needed to talk about. Anybody got any big exciting things going on over the holidays? Matt, you going anywhere?
Just watching soccer games.
We're going to St. Louis. St. Louis with the wife.
Lots very nice.
Eating, Italian family.
Very nice.
Always
very
a nice. Good time. Yeah. Are you with the blessed baby?
The blessed child and I will be available, yes. So should anyone need her to comment on their you know, Christmas outfit or whatever, she'll be there for you.
Dave, why don't you give out your phone number for anyone who has problems with your blog post?
I mean, I've got 50 email addresses. I mean, the thing that I thought was impressive is that he navigated our company phone tree, which, to be perfectly honest, I can't figure out. And, you know, to have fought his way through. All the way through was really something. That's some fortitude that I just don't carry with me anymore.
I think that's awesome. I don't even get stuff like that. That's fantastic.
It was awesome. And as I said, I was really in a really bad mood. And at first I was ready to just fly into a rage. And instead I felt a lot better about it. And then I actually, to be perfectly honest, I thought it was you calling to mess with me. And I even said that when I first when he said, "Who is this?" I said, "Who is it?" He's like, "I'm not telling you." I said, "Come on, Ashley," because it was a 650 number. You know, it was like it had all the signs of being you.
Is that a compliment or a put down?
Absolutely, because you know I figured who else is going to give me shit like that? No normal person is going to call me and give me a hard time.
That's fantastic. Now I'm gonna keep you on your toes.
Yeah, just what I need, man. I'm already on the edge. The our CFO gave me the week off next week. If that tells you where I'm at this point.
Well, as always, you can find me on the register and Dave at Negative Approach. Is it The Negative Approach or Negative Approach?
It's just Negative Approach. CNET.com/Negative Approach.
And Matt, is it The Open Road or just Open Road?
Open Road. It's blogs.cnet.com, Open Road.
You can just do cnet.com/TheOpenRoad as well. I learned this the other day.
And on mine.
I did, you damn you.
You can't. I'm doing it right now.
You can always Google or Yahoo search for these fine gentlemen's words of wisdom.
CNET.com, Open Road. And
The Open Road.
Is nothing.
Okay,
nothing.
Dummy. I spelled that
you
wrong.
You lose. It's not there. You're the only one who gets the...
What happened? How did that happen?
It's always been that way.
I'm the best.
I'm not very special, let's be honest.
No. Yeah, you got nothing, and you post a lot more than I do.
This is good shit. We should just do play-by-play of typing in URLs more often. You know?
Well, you know, I don't know if Matt wants to make any disclosures about his blog tactics, but he and I learned a pretty funny thing the other day.
Go on. Go
about,
on.
Just about blogging, and we were lamenting the fact that our posts aren't always the top ones because our egos need it.
And there is a way to make them the top ones.
And Matt figured it out.
What do you have to put in the headline?
No, it's not that. It's
not that. My editor over there told me, though, if I could figure out a way to get... I forgot what it was exactly, but it was like Steve Jobs porn bomber into a headline, I'd be guaranteed to win the award for the year.
Oh, yeah. We have that recipe. That recipe, it's RIAA Linux,
right.
P2P, Balmer.
Facebook, privacy, S. Bastardization, Apple,
Google S. Know,
suck, whatever. It's all good.
I mean, Google ass goes a long way.
Google ass. I'm into it. I don't think there's anything else before we sign off here. I feel better that I vented a little bit.
I think we're done.
I was going to say, I don't think there was much before we signed off.
This has really been a good one where we've provided no value. Somebody asked me the other day, one of the guys I work with, he's like, how long is this thing? Like 4 hours? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, what are you doing listening to? Go write some code.
I wish we had talked about the journalism shit on a day when I was more lucid instead of having my head full of snow.
Maybe we could make that a topic next time and you could bring in some experts. You know, I know a guy who would like to interview some journalists.
Yeah.
Who'd like, maybe like to take over the show. I don't know. You tell me. That's good.
I've heard about that. Officially, that is the end of Open Season 8.